WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Henry. Good morning. It's the 15th of July, 2020. This morning I'm going to play a couple of episodes I've kind of kept in my back pocket for various reasons over the last several months. We're going to start off this morning with episode 9 of Box 13, A Book of Poems, with an original air date of the 17th of October, 1948. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. And as Henry said, previously recorded.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of the Star Times.
Carl! Carl! What are you doing?
Nothing. I ain't doing nothing.
It's just a book, Holiday. Somebody sent a book to Box 13. Why?
And now, Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Susie. Susie, come here a minute, will you?
Did you call me, Mr. Holliday?
How did you guess?
I heard you.
All right. Now that we've cleared that up, how about this book?
That one?
This one.
It came in the mail for Box 13.
You're sure?
Sure, I'm sure, Mr. Holliday. The wrapping paper's right in the wastebasket there. I'll get it and show you. Here.
Address printed. Block letters. Shaky hand. Susie, did any letter come with this?
Just the book.
Ex Libris. Robert N. Chase. All right, Susie, we've got a problem. Somebody sends me a book from the library of Robert N. Chase. Why?
Maybe it's a bestseller.
Yeah, in its day it was. Still is. The Poems of Sir Walter Scott.
Do you like poetry, Mr. Holliday?
Love it, Susie. Just love it. Listen. If thou wouldst view fair Melrose aright, go visit it by the pale moonlight. The gay beams of lightsome day gild, but to flout the ruins gray. Pretty, huh?
What's it mean, Mr. Holliday?
Susie, you're asking the jackpot question. The book's broken to fall open at this poem.
Why?
We're in a rut. There's one way to get out of it. If anyone calls for me, I'll be in the morgue.
Star Times.
Sure, sure. Robert N. Chase. We've got plenty about him, Holliday.
Well, let me have it.
You ought to remember him.
Vaguely, I do. All right, Mac, what do we got?
Headlines. Lots of them.
Headlines, huh? What's he been doing?
Same thing he's been doing for the past 10 years.
He's in a rut, too.
6 foot deep.
Dead?
Here. You read all about it, Dan.
Socialites dead in tragic blaze. Oh, sure, I remember now. But 10 years ago, I was cutting my reporter's teeth on a police beat.
Yeah, that's right. A cop wouldn't get a juicy story like this to cover.
Son near death. Daughter at school escapes tragedy. Last night, fire swept the Robert N. Chase mansion. blaze, unnoticed until too late, spread rapidly. Injured son not expected to live.
He did, though.
Uh-huh, I see. Mildred Chase, 18, was attending a college function when the flames took the lives of her parents and swept rapidly through the palatial country estate, Fair Melrose. They were... Fair Melrose?
Yeah, that was the name of the estate.
Fair Melrose. Mac, the Chase girl, got anything on her?
What paper didn't have?
What do you mean?
You know, too much dough, spoiled kid, wrong company. She ran smack into the gossip stuff almost every week.
Know where she is now?
Well, she dropped back after the fire. It kind of cooled her off.
Oh, she's been a good girl ever since, is that it?
Well, that's it. I tell you what, Dan, drop upstairs to see Mona in society. She can give you the dope.
All right. Thanks, Mac. Say, you must come and visit my morgue sometime.
I like this one. I only read about characters. I don't have to bump into them.
Ah, but mine move around, Mac, and sometimes too fast.
Oui, monsieur.
Ah, free French or engaged?
You wish to see someone, monsieur?
Yes, Miss Chase. Miss Mildred Chase.
You have an appointment?
Is that an offer or a business question?
Monsieur, if you will tell me...
Colette, what is it?
There is someone here, mademoiselle.
I don't wish to be disturbed.
I'm sorry, monsieur, but Mademoiselle Chase, she is not home.
Oh, I see. Then you've got a talking piano.
Oh, please, monsieur. I cannot let you in. You heard mademoiselle.
Yes, I did. But if you will go in and tell Mademoiselle that Sir Walter Scott is waiting to see her, I'm sure she'll listen. What do you say?
Well...
Vive la France.
All right. You wait here. But I cannot promise.
Yes? What is it?
What do you want?
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Chase. I have to see you.
Well, I don't know you. I've never seen you before.
Well, lots of people haven't. But my name's Dan Holliday.
The name means nothing to me.
It means everything to my mother.
What do you want?
I'm sorry, Miss Chase, bursting in like this. But I've come to see you about Fair Melrose.
Who are you?
Oh, I told you. Dan Holliday. Occupation, fiction writer.
And are you writing now, Mr. Holliday?
Maybe. Oh, is this yours?
Mine? That book?
Here, take it.
Where did you get this?
You don't know.
No. Where did you get it?
But you do recognize it.
Yes. It was part of my father's collection. I asked you, how did you get it?
Through the mail. It was addressed to Box 13, care of the Star Times. Or doesn't that mean anything?
No. Nothing at all.
You should read the classified ads, Miss Chase. Box 13. Adventure wanted, will go anywhere, do anything.
But you
see, I...
Thank you for bringing the book back to me, Mr. Holliday.
You don't have any idea why the book was sent to me?
I don't know any more about it than you do.
Maybe you don't.
That's right. Colette will show you
all. Was there anything suspicious about the fire that destroyed Fair Melrose?
Mr. Holliday, I don't know what you have in mind, but that was a cruel thing to say. A hateful thing. You're not proud of it, are you?
I'm nothing one way or the other, Miss Chase. But that book was sent to me. It was broken to fall open at the poems about Fair Melrose. I'd just like to know why.
I know nothing about it. All I know is that fire took my mother and father.
It's very sad, Miss Chase.
And my poor brother was left a hopeless invalid, completely paralyzed, unable to speak, to move.
Where is your brother now?
At Fair Melrose. The place he always loved.
But I thought it was destroyed by fire 10 years ago.
Yes. But one wing remained standing.
Your brother is there alone?
Yes. That's where he would want to be. And I arranged for someone to care for him.
Oh, I see.
And now, Mr. Holliday, I'd like to forget all this.
Well, I'm sorry to have bothered you, Miss Chase. I was merely curious about that book.
I know nothing about it. All I want to do is to forget. To forget.
What you want this hour of the night?
I'm looking for Fair Melrose.
Eh? What for?
Will you tell me how I can get there? I'm lost.
Stay lost, then.
Just a minute, please.
Get your foot out of the door. Get.
Don't be afraid. I'm not going to harm you. I just want to know the way to Fair Melrose.
What for?
I've got business there.
You're lying. Nobody's got no business there. Nobody.
All right, I'm nobody. Is your house on the grounds?
Well, it should be. Been here for 30 years.
Oh. Nice little cottage you've got here.
What you want to go up there for?
To look at it.
What for?
Huh. Nice waltz we're having.
Young fella, I asked you a question, and you ain't answered.
All right. I want to find out about the fire.
Well, ain't nothing nobody needs to find out about it. It was a visitation of the Lord. It was a judgment on the sin that was going on. Heaven rained fire that night and wiped out the last of Babylon.
I'm not sure I got all that.
Oh, the wages of sin is death. Now you know.
Wait a minute. Were you here that night?
Me and Carl.
Carl?
And my husband. He was down here and seen the fire eaten up like the vengeance of the angels. We seen it, young fella. It was a judgment. A judgment for the years of sin. We didn't have to do no more caretaking after that night. Providence took care for us.
You and Carl, caretakers, is that it?
That's right. only one wing to take care of now. Only one wing, and him.
Oh, the brother.
Yes, yes, him that can't move or talk or hear. That's where they brung him, and that's where he stayed. Now, you get. I talked enough.
I wonder. How do I get up there?
You're still going up, huh?
More than ever now. Which way?
Straight up the canyon, turn left, it's top of the hill.
Thanks.
Well, maybe you should have picked a lighter night. Yes, one with a moon.
Maybe she's right, Holiday. This is definitely no night for a picnic. Now, who said it's going to be a picnic? Anybody here? Hello? And the same to you with feathers on. Hello? Light a match, Holiday. Don't be so stupid. Is anyone here? Mr. Chase? Oh, Mr. Chase. Holy mackerel. Who are you? Answer me.
You are listening to Box 13. Starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holiday. And now, back to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holiday.
Oh. Nice baritone voice you got there, Holiday.
Kling. Inspector Kling, where am I?
Hospital.
What for?
For your head. There's a little dent in it, about 2 inches deep.
Oh, I remember. Where is he?
He? Who?
The body.
Oh, the body. What body?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. How did you get in? Who found me? Who told you all about this?
The old girl, caretaker's wife. She found you.
Oh. Kling, I saw a body in Fair Melrose.
Holiday, I don't know what merry-go-round you're on, but keep up this way and you'll get the brass ring through your nose.
How do I get out of this place?
Walk out.
Thanks.
What are you going to do now?
Why?
I want to know where to pick up the body.
Keep in touch, Kling.
What have you got in mind?
A date. A date with a beautiful young lady. Slightly hysterical and more than a little mysterious. But interesting.
want here again, Mr. Holliday?
More to the point, what do you want?
Will you please leave?
Every time I come here, I get invited to leave.
I don't know what you're doing, Mr. Holliday, but it's none of your business. You ought to...
I went to Fair Melrose last night.
What for?
I wanted to see it. And your brother.
You mustn't see him.
Why not? What did he do, Miss Chase?
Please leave him alone.
All right. Did you go to Melrose last night?
No. I haven't been there for 10 years.
You weren't there the night of the fire either, were you?
No, I wasn't.
All right. I'll take your word for it. Now, mind if I ask you one more question?
If you'll go, I'll answer it.
It's a deal. What are you afraid of?
Nothing.
That's your answer?
Yes. I'd almost forgotten that horrible night until you came here. For 10 years, I've lived away from it, keeping it away from me. Now you've brought it all back. Don't you have any pity?
Lots of it, Miss Chase. For a lot of people. Particularly you.
What do you want to see him for?
I've got to. I want to talk with him.
He can't talk. He can't hear.
He's in the only wing left by the fire?
Well, that he is. You still want to go up to see him?
Yes, I do.
The chases. Devil's brood, all of them. Devil's brood. The young'un with her temper, screaming at her mother and father. And him that's upstairs now, always fighting with his sister. The fire was a visitation and a judgment of providence. There he is.
Oh, no.
Well, that's him.
You stay here. Mr. Chase. Mr. Chase.
Can't hear you. Can't hear. Can't.
Shut up. Mr. Chase, I'm Dan Holliday. Box 13. Box 13, do you understand?
Nodding his head. That's all he can do.
Mr. Chase, you wanted to see me. You sent me that book. You had Carl send it to me. Is that right? Nod your head if that's right. Good. Now, why?
He can hear.
You can hear me a little, can't you, Mr. Chase? Good. Why did you send me that book? Why did you want me to come here? He wants me to look around, Bertha. At what? At what?
Ain't nothing in here. Ain't nothing.
Look, Mr. Chase, I'll walk around the room. I'll watch you. When you want me to stop, nod your head. Understand? Good. Now watch me. Here, this trophy case. Is this it? What about it? What do you want me to see in this? Good. Bertha, come here.
I ain't coming in.
I said come here. Come on. Take a good look at this trophy case, Bertha. A good look.
I don't see nothing.
There's a plaque missing from its place. There's heavy dust around behind all those cups and trophies, but there's a clean spot here where a plaque stood. No dust, Bertha. No dust. Someone took a plaque from here not more than a few days ago. Did you?
I ain't touched nothing. Never touched nothing.
Mr. Chase, that plaque, whose was it? Yours? No? Your father's? Mother's? Mildred's. It was hers. But someone took it. Mr. Chase, try to understand. Try to answer. Please, you've got to.
He can't.
Mr. Chase, try hard. Try hard to hear me again.
Let him alone. He can't do no more.
Stay with him, Bertha. Don't leave him for a minute, do you hear? Oh, hello there.
Hello, Holliday.
Inspector, I'm in a hurry.
No, it looks like it. But you can spare a poor cop a couple of minutes to explain something, can't you?
What?
That body. We found it. In a ravine about a mile down the road.
All right, you found the body. Now I'm in a hurry. I gotta go.
Not so fast, Holliday.
There are a couple of questions I'd like to ask you.
Later, Kling, later. You know where to reach me.
Holiday. Come back, Holiday. I say come back here.
Ride me care of box 13.
You saw my brother, Mr. Holiday?
Yes, I saw him. Oh, please keep playing.
I don't know why I let you in here.
I do.
Can't you leave me alone?
Please, the piano. I like to hear it.
What did you find out?
So you don't know why anyone would have taken that plaque from the trophy case?
No!
Your brother managed to tell me it was yours.
He what? Where was it?
In the lower right-hand corner of the trophy case.
Lower right-hand corner? Lower.
That mean anything?
Well, it was a plaque I won for dramatics at Merrifield Academy.
I don't get it. What value does it have?
It isn't worth anything except...
Except what?
The plaque was presented to me at a dinner at Merrifield.
So, go on.
The dinner was the night of the fire at Melrose.
And the plaque would prove you were at Merrifield the night of the fire.
Yes.
But somebody... Somebody wants people to think you were at Fair Melrose. Were you?
No. How many times do I have to say that?
That's enough. Who hates you, Miss Chase?
My brother.
Your brother?
They all hated me. My mother, my father, my brother. Sometimes I think I hated them. Watching me, picking my friends, cutting me off from the friends I picked. I couldn't stand it.
I see. All right, Miss Chase. We'll forget it for now. But can I come back this evening?
Why?
I said before I wanted to help you. That still goes. Miss Chase, it still goes.
Please sit down, Mr. Holiday.
Thanks, Miss Chase.
Do you have anything to tell me?
A few things, yes. But first, is there anything you want to tell me?
Tell you? Why, no.
You sure?
Positive. What could I tell you?
A story.
I don't know what you mean.
All right, I'll explain.
Must you play the piano?
No, but I'd like to. Miss Chase... Let me tell you a story.
What about?
Well, I don't know whether it's exact or not. You see, I have to guess a lot. Fill in details myself. But this story's about a girl. An 18-year-old girl. That is, she was 18 10 years ago.
And what's that got to do with me?
Oh? You might be the girl, Miss Chase. Wild, with a temper. Bad temper. She had a lot of fights with her parents. Mostly about the friends she had, the way she ran around.
What are you trying to say?
That one night this girl set fire to her home in a fit of temper, after a fight with her parents. Maybe she didn't mean to do what she did, but the fire destroyed her home almost completely. It meant the death of her parents, and it made her brother a...
You're making this up. You're guessing.
I said I'd have to guess.
I was at Merrifield the night of the fire.
For a while. I checked. Found out you left early enough to get to Melrose. And you brought a plaque with you. The one you'd won for dramatics.
Well, I brought it to Melrose later. The next day or the next. I don't remember.
No, that's no good, Miss Chase. It's too hard to believe that anyone would walk into a ruined home and put a plaque in a trophy case. I say you took it to Melrose, then had the fight with your mother and father.
You're lying.
I don't think so.
I took it there after the fire.
And why is it missing? Want me to look around your apartment for it, Miss Chase? Or send for the police to look for it?
No.
Why not, if you haven't got it? Why are you afraid to let me look for it? So I am right. Now let's get on with the story. For 10 years you held the secret. There's nothing to connect you with the fire at Melrose except that plaque. For years that fire's on your mind. Day after day you have to live with the secret, wondering if there's anything that will connect you with that night. But there's nothing. There's nothing. Then you remember that plaque. It will prove that you were at Melrose. Because the date engraved on it is the same as the date of the fire.
No, I tell you it's not true.
So there's only one thing to do. Get that plaque out of Melrose. But you didn't count on one thing. Your brother. Day after day he saw that trophy case. Day after day it was the same. Never changing. Like the four walls he had to stare at. But suddenly it's different. There's something missing. He racks his brains and he remembers. He remembers the plaque that was there. When he was able to read, he must have read about the fire. How you escaped the tragedy by being at school that night. How lucky everyone said you were. He read how you were presented with a plaque for dramatics. And his tortured mind puts two and two together. And he arrives at the conclusion that you were at Melrose. Home. The night of the fire. Well, Miss Chase, did you like that story?
There's nothing you can prove.
Maybe not. But how about Carl's murder? You killed him. Because you thought Carl was me last night.
No. What are you doing?
Calling the police. It's for them now. I think they'll prove you killed Carl. They're good at that sort of thing, Miss Chase. Very good.
No, please. What do you want? Money? I'll give you money, anything, only don't call them.
Why not?
Please.
Hello, Inspector Blinken.
They hated me, all of them.
Okay,
I hated them and you. I hate you.
Look out.
Oh, no.
Hello, Kling. Holiday. Come to the Sunview Apartments now. I just rang down the curtain on a 10-year dramatic act.
Must have been awful thrilling, Mr. Holliday.
Yeah, sure, Susie. About as thrilling as throwing dirt in a guy's face.
Oh. Well, here's some more mail for Box 13.
Later, Susie, later.
But here's something maybe you ought to look into.
What?
If you subscribe to this book club, you get a free set of Sir Walter Scott's poems.
Oh, fine. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures and may currently be seen in Wild Harvest. Box 13 is directed by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager, with an original story by Frank Hart Tausig. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. This is a Mayfair production.
Yes, that was episode 9 of Box 13, a book of poems with an original air date of 17th of October, 1948. Box 13, by all accounts, it just says it was broadcast from 1948 through the 50s as a syndicated, transcribed syndication program by Mayfair Productions. I just always thought it was interesting because the retired newspaper writer Dan Holliday just wanted to write fiction, so he advertised in Box 13 for stories. Well, now, come to the point in the program where we have to fulfill an FCC obligation.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. You're listening to Arthur here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. My show is titled The Grand Hour, And for the second half of the program, I'm going to play episode 18 of Cloak and Dagger, Overground Railroad, with an original air date of the 8th of September, 1950.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS. Ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
Black warfare, espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. In tonight's episode, Overground Railroad, the part of Lieutenant Fontaine, OSS agent who helped thousands of American airmen escape to safety, is played by Les Tremaine. The story is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
When a flyer was forced down behind enemy lines, he was just another fugitive, moving cautiously at night to avoid detection, fighting for survival. His shelter was a haystack or a hedgerow. For food, he dug raw potatoes or turnips from the field. And in his panic, he was always just one step ahead of the Gestapo, with no knowledge of the country and no friend to whom he could turn. A few of the lucky ones managed to escape back to England. I met one of those lucky ones in Colonel Johnson's office at OSS headquarters in London.
Lieutenant Fontaine, this is Major Davidson.
How do you do, Major?
Glad to know you, Fontaine.
Now, before I ask Major Davidson to tell you a story, I want to say something.
Yes, Colonel Johnson?
At its narrowest, the English Channel is only 20 miles wide. Yet it took Major Davidson here more than a year to get across. And hundreds of Allied pilots all over France haven't been able to make it yet. And if something isn't done to help them, they never will.
But, Colonel, with the Nazis occupying France...
With the Nazis occupying France, the channel is still only 20 miles wide. Our trouble has been that up to now, we've had no contact with the French underground. No way of helping them smuggle pilots out of France. All right, Major Davidson, go ahead. Tell your story now.
Well, I was shot down over the south of France, coming back from a bombing mission. The rest of the crew was killed. It was just my co-pilot, Johnny Porter, and me left.
Yes. Go on, Major.
We figured our numbers were up. Any flyer force down on enemy territory figures that nowadays, but we were lucky. A farmer picked us up and hit us overnight. And then the next morning, a big black limousine drove up, and a woman about 60 got out. She took us to her house in Paris and kept us there. She found a way to smuggle us across the channel with a fisherman just a few days ago.
Who was this woman, Major?
Her name is Madame Annette Joubert. I used to tell her she meant more to the Yankee team than Joe DiMaggio. During the time we were with her, she managed to collect two more of our boys, but she has no way of getting them out of France.
Well, what do you think, Fontaine?
Just what you think, Colonel. For the first time, OSS has a lead, a contact. What'd you say this woman's name was, Major?
Joubert, Madame Annette Joubert, and quite a gal, too.
Colonel Johnson, with her help, maybe we can set up a chain of way stations. Establish an overland railroad. Collect our flyers and move them like chessmen right across France to the Channel.
How soon can you leave?
Anytime you say, Colonel Johnson. Anytime. Oh, by the way, Major... How will I be able to identify myself to Madame Joubert? Did you agree on any code word, anything?
Yes. Here you are.
A black lace garter. I left London a few days later and landed the next morning on the coast of France. A disguised fishing boat let me off and I made my way to Paris undetected. It was spring, 1944. I was going to know April in Paris, but not the way any American tourist before the war had known it. The red dawn was touching the roofs of Paris, the golden dome of the Pantheon. Most of the city was still dreaming of other, better springtimes before the Germans came. Then the city started to wake up. Bakers were at work through the windows, wetting the dough. The waiters from the cafes were sweeping into the gutter the cigarette butts that their customers had dropped under the tables the night before. For a few minutes, it was the Paris my mother had talked about. And then, an official Nazi car turned the corner, and I knew that everything had changed. I made my way to 46 Rue Danzig, where I'd find Madame Annette Joubert. Madame Joubert! Madame Joubert!
What are you doing making all that racket so early in the morning? People are still trying to sleep here.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm looking for Madame Annette Joubert. This is her house, isn't it?
Oui, it is her house.
Did you see her go out this morning?
Do you think I have nothing better to do than keep an account of her comings and goings?
But
I did not see her go out this morning, and I have not seen her go out any morning for a week. She has moved.
Moved?
If you take the trouble to look, you'll see the windows are all boarded up.
Madame! Madame, please! I've got to locate her. I'm her nephew.
Ask her good friends, the Germans, where she is. Go to the Gestapo!
Now, well, wait a minute, please!
I was up a blind alley. I had come to Paris because I had a contact. Now the contact was gone.
There you are, monsieur. More café.
Merci.
You're the first one in my cafe this morning. Oh, I remember other springs. It was always crowded at this time. What is it, monsieur? Do you not feel well? Something wrong?
Oh, no. Not wrong, exactly. It's just that I came to Paris to see my aunt. It seems she's moved and left no forwarding address.
Oh, what a pity. But there is always one way to find her.
A way? What is it?
You have only to go to the Gestapo and ask. They will tell you.
Go to the Gestapo and ask. Sure, why not? OSS wasn't particular who helped us as long as we got the help. I was sure Colonel Johnson wouldn't object to my letting even the Gestapo give us a hand. I beg your pardon.
The Count is here on the phone. Wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
Ja, Kommandant. Ja, augenblicklich. Für augenblicklich, ja, ich werde augenblicklich einen Eilboten rüberschicken. Jawohl, Herr Kommandant, jawohl. Now, what is it? What do you want?
I would like some information.
What kind of information?
I arrived from south of France this morning. I came to visit my aunt, only I discovered when I got here that she had moved.
Well, what do you want us to do about it?
Well, I merely request her change of address. I felt certain it would be in the records of the Gestapo.
No, natürlich, it's in our records. The address or change of address of anyone in Paris is listed with us. What's the name of your aunt?
Joubert. Madame Annette Joubert, Sergeant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see your papers.
Oh, yes, see. Here you are. Mm-hmm.
Now, these papers of yours intrigue me. Never seen any like them before.
Is something wrong with them?
What? Yeah, on the contrary, they are filled out extremely accurately. Usually one thing or another is omitted. I congratulate you on your thoroughness. Oh,
thank you, Sergeant. Thank you.
Herr Kommandant, there is a Frenchman at the front desk who is trying to locate his aunt, Madame Annette Joubert. Yeah, Kommandant. Jawohl, I'll send him in.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sergeant.
Wait, one other thing. Your suitcase.
What? My suitcase?
No one is allowed past this desk without having his luggage or packages checked. Put your suitcase up here and open it.
suitcase was filled with clothing, but there was a false bottom to it. And in the false bottom was a shortwave radio. If the sergeant accidentally pushed the button that would reveal the radio...
What are you so slow about? Here, give me the suitcase.
Oh, yeah.
Ach, don't know, that's a schwer. What do you have in it, rocks?
Well, no, it's a
gold case. The cowhide, the metal open it.
Yes. There, you see? Just personal articles.
Yeah. So I see. Now, do you think I expected you to walk into Gestapo headquarters with a time bomb or a shortwave radio in your suitcase, perhaps? That's just routine. I must check up everything. All right, go ahead. Commandant's office is right down the hall. First door you come to on the right.
Sit down, Monsieur Fontaine. A cigar? These wine-soaked French cigars are very good.
Thank you, Herr Commandant.
I never resist a good cigar or a pretty girl. You wonder, perhaps, why I am seeing you personally about this matter of locating your aunt, eh?
Whatever the reason, Commandant Kurtz, I'm flattered.
Oh, not at all. Tell your aunt for me that I am delighted to render her this little service. A fine woman, a delightful woman, and a clever woman, too. She's been most cooperative.
Oh, I'm sure she has. Commandant Kurtz, it is most urgent that I find her.
Urgent? How urgent?
I have news for her about my uncle, her brother, who is very ill in the south of France.
Ah, pity. Tell her for me that if she desires to travel, I will arrange for the necessary permit, of course.
Well, you're very kind.
Not at all. Now, let me see. Here it is. She's boarded up her house at 46 Rue Danzig, as you know, and moved to another residence 20 kilometers southwest of Perls in the village of Touriferot. Here, I'll write out the exact address.
Thank you for your help, Herr Commandant. I assure you, I will never forget it. I took a train to the village of Touriferot, and all the way I kept thinking about Madame Joubert. The German High Command evidently considered her one of the most important collaborationists. We considered her our most important contact with the French underground. She certainly had someone fooled. I hoped it was the Nazis.
Madame Joubert is in here, monsieur, in the library.
Merci.
Monsieur Fontaine, madame.
Come in. Cécile, you may go and close the door.
Oui, madame.
Come close. No, come closer. Let me have a good look at you. Eh bien, it's quite far enough. Now, what's all this nonsense about being my nephew?
What's the matter, Auntie? Don't you recognize me?
I've never seen you before in my life.
I have regards for you from friends.
Friends?
Major Norman Davidson and Lieutenant Johnny Porter.
I've never heard of them.
You don't remember helping to smuggle them across the channel, Auntie?
This is insolence. Of what are you accusing me?
Of being an important link in the French underground.
Nonsense. I know of no underground. If there is one, it does not concern me. Now go back and tell them at Gestapo headquarters that they have made a mistake. And tell Commandant Kurtz I am hurt at his suspicions of me.
What makes you think the Gestapo sent me?
Only the Gestapo knows my change of address.
They were very obliging. They gave it to me.
I ask you to leave, monsieur. I am very busy this afternoon.
I believe you lost this, Madame Joubert.
That black lace garter, where did you get it?
It was given to me by Major Davidson, who says you mean more to the Yankee team than Joe DiMaggio.
Oh.
He also told me to give you a great big kiss for him.
Well, bless my heart. Bless my heart, indeed.
You still want me to leave?
You are as fresh as all Americans. Sit down.
Thank you.
So you just walked in and asked the Gestapo. Oh, stupid swine. Oh, I'd like to see their faces if they knew.
Oh, come, Madame Joubert. Is that a way to talk? They think very highly of you.
Which is just what I want them to think.
Where are the other two pilots now, madame?
I deposited them in a monastery in the south for safety.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no way to get them to the channel.
Look, Madame Joubert.
Oui.
Perhaps you and I can establish a chain of way stations, safe houses across France. Then the OSS can collect the hundreds of flyers who were shot down and you can send them back to safety.
Yes, but how could I do that without help, without a way to contact England?
I have a radio in the suitcase.
Oh, very well. In the morning, we will drive to the monastery. The monks there are friendly. They would be more than glad, I'm sure, to let us use that as a base to start operations.
Oh, great. That's wonderful, Madame Joubert.
You had a kiss for me from Major Davidson. Where is it?
Right here, Auntie.
Merci. And now, young man, you will oblige me by giving me back my garter.
Yeah? Yeah, she was quite a girl, all right, Madame Joubert. She gave me a suite of rooms to myself, got me a chauffeur's uniform, decided my name should be Claude. And in the morning, we set out for the monastery.
Yes, yes, Lieutenant Fontaine. Hey, Claude, that is just what we will do.
Yes. OSS will furnish each member of an air crew with detailed escape maps when they are briefed in England, pinpointing the friendly areas on the route of every mission. Do you think these safe houses will be difficult to set up?
Oh, not too difficult, I think. I know already of the home of a sympathetic parish priest, a church, a school, a farmhouse, and I have many wealthy friends who will be willing, I am sure. Why are you slowing down?
Nazi guard wants me to stop.
Don't worry, I have all the necessary permits.
Hey! Let me see your permit to travel.
Here you are. This is a great inconvenience. I will report it to my friend, Commandant Kurtz.
Commandant Kurtz? Ach, yeah. I see you have his personal stamp on this pass. Where are you headed for, Madame Joubert?
I have business in the village.
Ah, I would suggest you do not go today.
Why not?
There is to be an execution in the square. Not very pleasant, madame.
Execution? What are you talking about?
We found 35 tons of arms and materials that were stolen from German supply trains.
Found all that? Where?
In the monastery.
The monastery? I cannot believe that.
Yeah, but it is true. And today they will be shot. 5 of them.
I see. Claude, continue.
You may go if you like, but it will not be very pleasant.
Claude, continue.
Oui, madame.
They discovered the supplies in the monastery.
What about the 2 American flyers you had hidden there? Did they discover them too? Are they among the 5?
Quickly. Drive quickly, Claude.
We reached the square, parked the car, and got out. The people were huddled in little whispering groups. At the far end of the square stood the monastery, and lined up at the wall were 5 monks, their heads lowered, their hands fingering the crosses around their necks. Facing them was a Nazi firing squad. Madame Joubert grabbed my arm.
What are we to do?
I don't think there's anything we can do. Shh!
Let this be a lesson to your people of this village. This is what happens to those who fight against us. These 5 will be shot. The other monks in the monastery will be sent to Germany. You understand? Take a good look. Learn your lesson well. Ready? Ready? Fire!
Madame Joubert and I went back to the car. But, Madame Joubert, if you drive back yourself, what'll the guard say who stopped us before?
I am an excellent liar.
I will simply tell him I went to see a sick relative and left you there to help.
But
I must drive back immediately. As I told you, I am giving a birthday party for Commandant Kurtz. I hope he does not live to see his next. Now, you go to the convent. It is only a few kilometers from here. You know what to do.
Yes, I know what to do. Madame Joubert, what do you think happened to those two pilots who were hidden in the monastery?
They were probably found and killed. But Lieutenant Fontaine, we must go on with our plans. Some have been killed, oui. But many can be saved.
I said goodbye to her. She drove away. The convent of Our Sacred Lady was within walking distance. When I reached the gate, I saw an avenue of acacia trees leading to the great ornate iron door. The center panel formed the figure of the Virgin Mary. It was really spring in these gardens, a peaceful sanctuary in a war-ridden world.
What is your wish?
I would like to see the Mother Superior.
Follow me.
I followed the nun through the spacious hall. It was part vestry, part repository of art objects. The walls were hung with darkened old paintings of the Holy Family. In glass chests along the vestry, religious utensils of gold and silver had been stored.
This is the office of Mother Angeline. Come.
So you want me to let you use the convent of Our Sacred Lady as a base for your underground operations?
Mother Angeline, if you know the risk yourself and refuse, I can't find it in my heart to blame you. But if you agree, I want you to know first just what those risks are.
Tell me, my son.
I've just come from the village. The monastery there was raided last night. With my own eyes, I saw five of the monks shot. The others were hauled away by the Nazis. Only God knows where.
I know about that. I heard this morning.
If this convent is used as a hideout and the shortwave radio is hidden here, can you imagine what the Germans would do if they found out? You would expect no better treatment than the monks received.
I thank you for telling me this. You are right. It is a great risk. I have many under my care here. They depend on my wisdom to do the right thing.
Of course. You have the other sisters to consider.
You came here today to convince me of your cause. I'm afraid I must disappoint you.
What's that?
You see, I...
What's the matter?
A German armored car. I can see it from the window.
Coming here?
I'm afraid so. It is the first time we have been raided. I am not looking forward to their muddy boots in this place of God.
They'll find me, Mother Angeline. What can I do? Where can I hide?
They are at the door.
You rang for me, ma mère?
Yes, Sister Therese. Give my friend one of the sister's robes. One long enough to cover him, and a hood.
Oui, ma mère.
The other sisters... Are they already in the chapel?
Oui, ma mère. They have started the afternoon adoration.
See that my friend joins them in prayer. Then open the main door. We have visitors.
I put the nun's robes over my suit and went with Sister Teresa to the chapel. I knelt with the others. About 20 benches divided by a middle aisle provided seats for the worshippers. At the far end of the room was a high pulpit. Many of the kneeling prayed with arms stretched out, symbolizing the form of the cross. The sister next to me clasped her hands, and on her ring finger was the silver emblem of a bride of Christ. They prayed almost silently. Hers were the only words I heard.
O maternal power of the universe,
Mother of divine grace, pray for us. Thou wisest virgin, thou kindly virgin, pray for us. Pray for the sick world.
Good sisters, these soldiers wish to search the chapel. I must bow to their wishes and ask you to file back to your cells. Leave now, quickly and quietly, please.
My head lowered, the hood covering my face, I got into the line with the sisters. I bent my knees slightly so that the robes would cover the chauffeur's boots I was wearing. I lowered my head even more as I passed the SS Hauptmann, who was standing with his men next to the Mother Superior at the door.
I regret the necessity of disturbing your prayer, Mother Angeline, but after the unfortunate incident in the monastery last night, I feel it is necessary.
You may search this convent from top to bottom, as you are already doing. You will find nothing in this house of God to interest you, I'm sure. Hurry, sisters, hurry, back to your cells.
They're really gone, Mother Angeline?
Of course, they found nothing here. You can take that robe off now. You look uncomfortable in it.
Thank you for protecting me. I believe now.
But we have not finished our conversation.
Mother Angeline, you told me I could not convince you about our cause. You said you'd have to disappoint me. I took that as your answer.
Let me consult two of the other sisters first. Wait. Oui, ma mère? Our two sisters, those in the sacristy. Send them here, please, Sister Celeste.
A few minutes later, Sister Celeste returned, followed by the two other nuns. Their arms folded and heads lowered, they shuffled into the room. And then, all of a sudden, I noticed broad-toed army boots protruding beneath the long black dresses. One of the heads raised, and I saw that he needed a shave. Mother Angeline, I don't understand. These men?
They are American pilots brought here yesterday when the monks received underground information that the monastery would be raided. Major Kirstein, Captain Lewis, this is Lieutenant Fontaine of the OSS.
OSS? That's great. Have you got a way of getting us out of France, Lieutenant?
Yeah. Say, what happened to Madame Joubert? She all right?
Yeah, she's all right. Mother Angeline, you led me to believe I wouldn't be able to convince you of our cause.
Of course not, son. How could you, since I was already convinced?
The convent of Our Sacred Lady was the first link in a chain of safe houses that was forged within a couple of months under Madame Joubert's leadership. We moved Major Kirstein and Captain Lewis along that chain until they reached the coast of France. They waited, hidden in a farmer's barn, while I established contact with headquarters in London. Agent Fontaine to OSS headquarters in London. Overground railroad established. Train on the tracks. Passengers ready to leave and waiting. Pick them up and make room for more to come.
More did come. Over 2,000 more airmen who were shot down in occupied France rode the overground railroad established by Lieutenant Claude Fontaine to safety. Thus, once again, the report of another OSS agent closed with the words,
"Mission accomplished."
Listen again next week for another true adventure from the files of the OSS on
Cloak and Dagger.
Heard in tonight's Cloak and Dagger adventure as Lieutenant Fontaine was Les Tremaine, Madame Joubert, Branna Rayburn, and Mother Angeline Lily Valenti. The script was written by Winifred Wolfe and Jack Gordon. The music was under the direction of John Gart. Sound effects by John Powers and Manny Siegel. Today's OSS adventure was based on the book Cloak and Dagger by Corey Ford and Alistair McBain. This program was produced by Lewis G. Cowan.
This has been Arthur here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, hosting the Grand Hour. This show was previously recorded.